Would you mind staying at her place tonight? I know she'd appreciate it. Rose shuffled over. What's going on? It's Clementine, Grandma, said Holmes. Someone attacked her. Is she okay? She'll be fine, but she's unnerved, and for good reason. Rose gasped. What's going on in Wagtail? I'll round up some of the guys and we'll keep watch over our Clementine. Nobody messes with her. Rose whispered, Do you think there's a connection to Mallory's death? I was stunned that Rose had begun to have second thoughts about Doc's theory that the death was accidental. I decided to honor Clementine's wishes to keep her business private. If she wanted Holmes to know, she could tell him herself. She probably would. I don't know. Dave is with her now. Grandma, have you got everything under control? Asked Holmes. My goodness, yes. You go right on and help Clementine. I'll be here if Rose needs a hand. Thanks for telling me about this, Holly. It's good to have you back in Wagtail. He bounded off the porch in two giant steps and took off running along the sidewalk. Wish I could say the same, I murmured. Rose overheard me. Me too. He's not going to be happy with that prissy fiancé of his. I can't tell him anything, though. Who am I? Just his granny. Why would I know anything about love or life? She flashed me a little wink. Don't you give up on him. Rose, that ship has sailed. You and Oma have to face it. And so did I. I have one quick thing to do, and then I'll come down to assist you now that I've stolen your helper. Thanks to the late nights that the ghost hunters kept, the housekeeper was working afternoons instead of mornings. I'd barely seen her since I'd been back and had never really talked with her. Trixie followed along, sniffing the hallway on the second floor. The cleaning cart stood outside Grayson's room. I peeked inside. The petite housekeeper was tucking a fresh sheet under the mattress. Her long black ponytail swung as she worked. She wore a simple white T-shirt with the Sugar Maple Inn logo on it, a pair of white slacks, and running shoes. Hi, I'm Holly. I extended my hand. We've never been properly introduced. She smiled at me and shook my hand. Marisol. I pitched in and helped her make the bed. Are you happy to work afternoons for a change? No early mornings? She smiled. It's okay. I like getting up early. I was helping her turn back the sheet when a black tail whooshed by my legs. Twinkle Toes? Your kitten likes to help me. She's very, how do you say? Nosy. I watched as she knocked a tube of lip balm off the desk and spun it into the bathroom. Mrs. Muir slunk through the door, her body low to the ground like a wildcat on the hunt. She spotted the lip balm on the bathroom floor and knocked it back into the bedroom. I should have realized. Twinkle Toes and Mrs. Muir were our poltergeists. Silly kitties. So, Marisol, do the guests wash their clothes sometimes? Have you noticed any wet clothes when you're cleaning? She blinked at me as though I had asked an odd question. I guess I had. I could have phrased it more delicately. Mostly the ladies, Mrs. Lillian and Miss Eva, but sometimes men do too. Oh, like who? Marisol gripped fresh towels in her hands. Her dark eyes rose to meet mine. This is about the dead girl? I might as well tell her the truth. Yes. Mr. Felix is very tidy and hung some things in the shower to dry. Also Mr. Grayson and Mr. Bryan. Felix, I never seriously suspected him. We finished making the bed. I gazed around the room. Grayson's clothes lay on a chair as though he had changed in a hurry. I peeked in the bathroom. Male toiletries cluttered the counter. It was a large, old-fashioned bathroom with a charming clawfoot tub. Thank you, Marisol, I said. If you need anything, let me know, okay? I walked to the door. Holly? I turned to look at her. Zelda couldn't kill anybody. She is much too kind. I know, Marisol. Thanks for sticking up for her. An hour later, Dave marched through the front door. I knew trouble was brewing when Twinkletoes arched her back like a Halloween cat and hissed at him. She dashed up the grand staircase and watched him. Mrs. Muir followed her cue, eyeing Dave with wary suspicion. She let out a blood-curdling yowl. "Is Eva here?" Dave asked. My breath caught in my throat. I nodded. "In her room, I think." Dave strode through the library. I could hear him knocking on her door. Felix, Mark, Grayson, and Brian clustered around me. "What's going on?" asked Felix. Before I could answer, Eva and Dave emerged and walked toward us. Eva reached out to me. "Will you take care of Mrs. Muir?" "You're arresting her?" asked Brian. A gleeful smile played across his face. Dave was carrying a clear plastic bag in his hand. A chill shook me when I realized that Mallory's lavender necklace nestled inside it. There wasn't a reason in the world that I could think of for Eva to have the necklace in her possession. "No." Mark stepped forward. "No, she didn't do it. I killed Mallory." "Ah," moaned Felix. "Don't do this, Mark." "Shh," Mark hissed. In a gentle voice, he said, "I can't let you take the blame for this, Eva." Oh, no. Had they both been in on it? From her spot on the stairs, Mrs. Muir lived up to her name by emitting complaining meows. "Mark, stop it!" Felix pushed his way next to Mark. Mark held Eva's hands and stared into her eyes. "Leave me alone, Felix." "But you didn't." Felix looked at Dave. "He didn't kill Mallory." Dave drank it all in without a word. "Okay," said Felix. "If you killed Mallory, how did her necklace end up in Eva's room?" "I hid it there after I killed her." Oh, no, that didn't sound good at all. Poor Eva. She had been right about Mark all along. "Mark," Eva whispered. "Why?" He squeezed her hands. "I won't let you take the blame, Eva." He looked into her eyes with love. "You're ready to confess?" asked Dave. Mark nodded. Dave escorted him out the door. Behind them, Felix protested. "Mark, don't do this. Don't believe him, officer. Ask him for details. He won't know the answers." Eva scooped up Mrs. Muir and held her so tight that Mrs. Muir complained. Eva released her grip, but didn't let go. She sat down on the sofa in the sitting room, still clutching Mrs. Muir. The other ghost hunters clustered around her. Grayson released a long breath and shook his head. "Lillian warned Mark about Mallory." "Warned Mark? What do you mean?" "Seemed like it should have been the other way around." "I came up a few days early," said Grayson. "Lillian is friends with Mark's parents, so we went out to dinner a couple times. Mark didn't want Mallory to come with us, but every time she showed up at the restaurant uninvited, like she was following us. Lillian said Mark needed to be really careful, because that was obsessive behavior. Unbalanced, I think Lillian called her. She was really worried about Mark letting Mallory stay at his place." "Hey, where's Ben? Mark needs a lawyer." "Ben?" He raised his voice. "Ben? Felix, hand me your phone. I'll call his room." "Bet you'll be glad to get your new phone." Felix glanced at me. "Can you believe it? Grayson dropped his in the tub." "Had he?" I squinted at Grayson. I had just been in his bathroom and the tub was nowhere near anything. Unless he was talking on the phone while bathing, which I doubted. I didn't quite buy that story. Felix sat on the sofa with his elbow on the armrest and his forehead in his hand. He doesn't need a lawyer anyway. Felix glanced at his watch. I bet he's back here in less than 2 hours, and that includes driving time. Brian frowned at him. Are you a psychic now? No, I don't have to be a psychic. Mark didn't kill Mallory. He just said he did to protect Eva. When Dave starts questioning him, he's going to get stuff wrong, and the police will realize that he had nothing to do with Mallory's death. To protect me, Eva wiped her face with her fingers. What do you mean? From the beginning, Mark was afraid you killed Mallory. She's the reason that you broke off your engagement to Mark. He knew how much you hated her. He thought I killed her? How could he imagine for even a second that I would do anything so heinous? Funny, she had suspected the same thing about Mark. Felix groaned. Are you kidding? He's so crazy mad in love with you that he's willing to take a murder rap for you. Eva gulped air and sniffled. Why did Mallory have to show up and ruin everything? Felix, are you sure they'll bring Mark back? Maybe Grayson is right, and we should send Ben to help him. Ben happened to be ambling down the stairs and heard his name. Felix made quick work of filling him in. Seemingly in deep thought, Eva sat quietly, stroking Mrs. Muir's silky fur. I liked Eva. If Mark had confessed to a murder he didn't commit just to protect her, then her trip to Wagtail had turned out better than she initially thought. She had Mark in her life again. In a way, I envied her. Ben wouldn't have protected me. He would have turned me in. And that brought me to another horrifying thought. What if Mark made that huge sacrifice because Eva really did murder Mallory? She certainly had motive. We knew she had been outside of the inn that night, not only because Brian saw her, but by her own admission. Her claims of the strange white light could have been nothing more than a story she invented. After all, she knew better than anyone what could and couldn't be proven. Eva, did you ever see that orb in your room again? I asked. She gazed at me in surprise. Eva set Mrs. Muir gently on the sofa and crooked her forefinger at me. I followed her to her room. She walked over to a recorder. Listen to this. She switched it on, and I heard the usual static of an EVP. I shrugged. But then I heard it. Little more than a whisper. Eva. Eva. She played it again. Eva. Eva. Maybe it was because of Halloween. Maybe it was because I had been immersed in ghost lore all week. But the disembodied voice creeped me out. If there was such a thing as a ghost, that soft, breathy voice, almost like a wind whispering in the trees, was how a ghost would sound. Goosebumps perked up on my arms. You're the only one I can talk with about this, because you don't believe in ghosts, she said. The past few days had loosened my conviction that ghosts didn't exist. I had learned about a lot of tricks, but the book on Aunt Bertie's table had opened the door in my mind just a crack. Even if there were low-frequency vibrations that we couldn't feel. I laughed aloud on purpose to break the tension. You're the expert. Mark thinks it's real. Eva strode to the sliding glass doors and looked outside. It's as though everything I knew for certain, all that was so clear to me, has suddenly been turned upside down. Do you think it was Mallory? She didn't wait for an answer. Of course you don't. It couldn't be. That's ridiculous. Would you listen to me? I'm no better than anyone else, allowing emotions to cloud my judgment. It's impossible that Mallory would have come to me as an orb when she died, or that this could be her. I did see her in the mirror. Eva turned around. Mark thinks Mallory is haunting me. 29. Haunting? The mere thought knocked the air right out of me. It was preposterous, of course. These people lived in a perpetual atmosphere of Halloween with notions of ghosts and goblins and otherworldly things in their heads. I responded carefully, though, so I wouldn't offend her. Do you think Mallory is haunting you? Eva rubbed her upper arms as though she was cold. A few days ago, I would have laughed at the mere thought. But strange things have happened since Mallory's death. The unexplained light in this room, Mallory's spirit in the mirror. Believers think that mirrors are portals for ghosts. Now the EVP with my name. I don't have an explanation for Mallory's necklace being in my room either. I couldn't help wondering if guilt played a role. Could it be that Eva expected to be haunted by the woman she murdered? Why would Mallory haunt you? Because I have what she wanted. I have Mark. I have his undying love. I can't believe he was willing to go to jail for me. I would have felt so much better if she had mentioned her innocence. I won, said Eva. In the end, I won. And Mallory had lost something much bigger than Mark or his love. She had lost her life. I was getting a little bit uncomfortable. Oh, Eva, you're the ghost debunker. You're supposed to see through these things and explain them away. That's just it. There are too many things I can't explain on this trip. There were a few things I couldn't explain either, like who killed Mallory and who attacked Clementine. But I wasn't planning to blame ghosts. I planned to find out who the perpetrators were, even if one of them turned out to be Eva. I left her room perplexed. Had Mark tried to take the blame because he knew Eva had killed Mallory? Back in the lobby, Ben was joking around with Felix, Grayson, and Brian. Want to join us for dinner at Chowhound? Sure. What about Mark? I thought you were off to help him. I phoned, said Grayson. He'll be back in about an hour. Oma and Rose breezed by us, unaware of what had transpired. Does everyone have a costume for tomorrow? It's Halloween, you know, said Rose. We wear them all day in Wagtail. The ghost hunters joked about dressing like ghost hunters, but Ben pulled me aside. Maybe I should buy a mask. To be in the spirit of things. It was a nice gesture. I wasn't used to this side of Ben. Back in Washington, he always turned down fun ideas. We'll meet you at Chowhound, I said. I dashed upstairs to retrieve my wallet. Ben, Trixie, and I strolled to All Dressed Pup, where I had seen costumes for people in the window. While Ben looked around, it dawned on me that Clementine might not have costumes for the children. If I didn't have any money, a costume was the last thing I would buy. Hey, Ben, if you were a 5-year-old boy, what kind of costume would you want to wear? I knew the answer before he said anything. The adult pirate costume he held in his hands was thoroughly boyish and loads of fun. He adjusted his glasses. Can a guy wear glasses over an eye patch? Absolutely. Try it out. I hid my smile. Maybe Wagtail brought out the best in all of us. A saleswoman hurried toward us to assist him. Meanwhile, I found 2 pirate costumes for 5-year-olds. I wasn't sure about Emily, banking on the notion that most girls liked princess clothes. I picked out a tiara, a pink dress, matching shoes that sparkled, a wand, and a white veterinarian coat. There weren't any rules that a princess couldn't be a doctor, too. Clementine said she had sold everything. I wondered if she had something fun to wear. I thought about a witch costume, not unlike the one I planned to wear. But when I saw the not-too-revealing I Dream of Jeannie costume, I dared to purchase it for her. With her hair pulled up in a ponytail, she would make a perfect genie. Besides, she could use a little magic in her life. She could always exchange it if she hated it. Armed with our purchases, I borrowed a Sugar Maple Inn golf cart. It was still daylight when I headed for Fireside Farms with Ben and Trixie. Ben exclaimed as the long white fences came into view. "This is quite a place. Is that really a chandelier in the stable?" "We call it a barn in these parts, and yes, it is a chandelier." Golf carts cluttered the driveway. The minute I stopped, Trixie jumped off and raced for the side door of the house. Ben and I followed her. I knocked and tried the door handle. It was locked. Parker let us in. Chaos reigned in the house. It looked and sounded like a huge party. Mr. Huckle offered us drinks. "Thank you, but we're not staying," I said. "What's going on here?" "It seems that Holmes took your request to God, Clementine, and the children quite seriously. Half of Wagtail is in the living room. They're doling out shifts at the moment. Shall I tell Holmes or Clementine that you are here?" "No, thank you. I'd rather you didn't." I handed the shopping bags to Mr. Huckle and whispered that they contained costumes for Halloween. He nodded. "Very kind of you, Holly. I'll see they get them in the morning. Maybe you shouldn't tell her who brought them. Just say they were delivered." Mr. Huckle smiled. "Why, the Halloween fairy, perhaps." "Works for me." I didn't want Clementine to feel indebted. We left in a hurry so she wouldn't see us there. We arrived at Chowhound just as Eva and Mark walked up. His arms circled her waist. Mrs. Muir and Twinkletoes accompanied them on leashes. I scooped up Twinkletoes for a big hug, but she was more interested in the faux crows that were staring at us. Trixie didn't mind the crows or the cobwebs and spiders that decorated the restaurant, but she jumped back in shock and yipped when the animated skeleton seated by the door spoke to her. We joined the others at a large table. The events of recent days had been wild and stressful, so when the waitress took drink orders, I dared to try a voodoo witch's brew. The names of the other drinks had us all laughing. Black Widow Martini, Once Bitten, Bewitched, and Hocus Pocus. Small wonder that Ben's staid request for a beer brought booze from our table. He sheepishly changed to a killer Bloody Mary. For dinner, I ordered the Vampire's Curse, which was shrimp and pasta in a potent garlic sauce. No garlic for Trixie, though. Goblin eyeballs made of ground chicken and rice, served on a bed of gold coin cooked carrots, sounded better for her. Twinkletoes insisted on sitting on my lap for a better view. She stretched her neck and gazed around with big, alert eyes. I ordered evil pirate booty for her from the feline menu. She would like the locally caught catfish. Twinkletoes and Mrs. Muir jumped into a bay window outfitted just for cats. It was decorated for the season, with skeletons resting among glowing pumpkins and mock tombstones. The cats explored and looked out at passers-by. Mark regaled us with the story of what he called his arrest, putting a humorous spin on what had undoubtedly been an unnerving experience.
"So, what did they ask you?" inquired Felix.
At that moment, the drinks arrived. Black, orange, red, and glow-in-the-dark blue. Black sugar rimmed some of the glasses. Dry ice caused fog to float off of others. When we recovered from our amusement, Mark finally answered.
"The same old stuff about Mallory. In a way, I can see why it sounds odd to them. Mallory was kind of childish. At first her attention was flattering. She was like a ghosty groupie. It didn't last long, though. For more than a year we had no communication at all." He rested his elbows on the table and tented his fingers. She appeared on my doorstep here in Wagtail without advance warning a few months ago. She had heard about the apparition apprehenders and the TV show. I informed her we had filled the positions and there was no room for her. My big mistake was letting her stay the weekend. She kept coming back. And then she went and promised Rose she would play the part of Becca Wraith. When Mallory showed up this weekend, I told her she had to find a room someplace else, but everything was booked for Halloween. I didn't want to let Rose down, so I agreed that she could stay with me. I wish I had never done that. Mark closed his eyes. If she had gone home, she'd be alive right now. Felix broke the silence. It's not your fault, Mark. You don't know what might have happened if you had turned her away. She might have died sooner.
Yeah, said Grayson. Hindsight always makes us wish we would have done things differently. But we don't know what might have happened instead.
Eva took Mark's hand and squeezed it in a show of solidarity.
Do they have any leads? Asked Brian,
looking straight at Eva.
Like they would tell me?
Mark sipped his drink and then shook his forefinger. But here's something bizarre. They asked me if any of us had a leg injury. What do you think that means?
I suspected I knew. Clementine must have told Dave about the person with the odd gait. I wasn't about to spill those beans, though. I scanned the people at the table. No one appeared upset by the revelation. What if the killer hadn't been a ghost hunter at all? Maybe a total stranger had killed Mallory. Over an hour later, we groaned after polishing off a 6-layer deadly devil's food cake with orange frosting and a scarily decadent chocolate ganache poured over the top and sides. Felix, Eva, and I still had time to get a little trick-or-treating in for Trixie, Casper, Mrs. Muir, and Twinkle Toes. The entire group came along for fun. In the plaza in front of the inn, a witch was handing out maps and paper trick-or-treat bags imprinted with the word Halloween and an adorable dog and cat wearing witchy attire. The witch rested a scraggly black fingernail against the wart on her nose. She gazed at the faces around her, causing several children to shriek and hide behind their parents. But every single one of them peered out at the witch. The toes of her shoes curled upward, and I suspected that the green stars on her stockings glowed in the dark. She cackled gleefully and threw her head back. The black hat with large white polka dots and a giant black and white bow stayed on her head. But the spider that hung off the bent tip swung through the air, eliciting more screams of fright.
"You, my little one."
She pointed a gnarled forefinger at me and crooked it.
"Come here, my dear," she said in a sing-song voice. "I've been waiting for you."
I shuffled through the crowd as though I had no will of my own and was under her power. A dachshund dressed as a skunk yelped a warning at Trixie as we approached the witch. But the scary woman didn't fool Trixie for a minute. She knew Rose by scent and wagged her tail with joy. Rose cackled at a boy who was pretending to be cool and bored with the whole thing. He jumped back and stuck closer to his dad, never taking his eyes off Rose. She raised her arms dramatically and whispered to me. 30.
Go by Doc's house and see if Bertie is there, will you? Mr. Luciano went out to dinner with Lillian.
If I know Bertie,
and I suspect I do, she's chasing Doc again. I tried not to giggle about the small-town romances and jealousies. What does Doc's place look like? It's down Cedar Street. You can't miss it. Skeletons are crawling out of the upstairs windows. I pretended to be entranced and walked away from Rose with my arms raised and pointing straight forward, like Frankenstein. Little kids parted before me, skittering back in fear. The ghost hunters fell in step, Felix and Grayson copying my awkward walk
and we marched toward the residential area on the east side of Wagtail. We soon broke into giggles and relaxed. The residents of Wagtail had outdone themselves again. Porch lights glowed, illuminating skeletons, witches, and, on one porch, a headless couple dressed for a ball. Children raced around the streets comparing their loot and pointing out the houses that were doling out the best booty. Costumed dogs and cats were either excited or wary in the midst of the commotion. Mark shouted, "Look, a bat!" We all turned our attention overhead. Indeed, a tiny bat flew along the street, swooping up and down. Twinkletoes and Mrs. Muir froze in ready-to-jump positions. If it came back our way and swooped too low, one of them might snag it. Screams arose and children rushed back to their parents. A few of the dogs yelped and tried to chase it. We visited a few houses, collecting an assortment of made-in-Wagtail dog and cat treats. Brian collected people treats at each house. We made fun of him until we hit a home where a sweet lady was handing out homemade chocolate chip cookies. Even though we'd eaten dinner and had full stomachs, the scent wafting out of the door almost induced drooling. Each of us politely accepted a soft cookie full of melting chocolate. At the house across the street, a fog concealed much of the porch. In the mist, we could make out a man holding up a lantern in one hand and lifting off his head with the other. Upstairs, skeletons crawled out of the windows. Doc had gone all out for Halloween. Even though we knew it was make-believe, the headless man caused us to approach the house with caution. Doomsday music played when Mark rang the doorbell. The door opened slowly with a frightening creak, and a black dog in a Batman costume dashed out, wagging his tail. He ran straight to Grayson, who rubbed his head with both hands. "Hey, Siggy, how's my pal?" asked Grayson. Doc stepped out, holding bowls of treats. There weren't many lights on inside the house. I shuffled over to get a better look. No sign of Birdie or any other female company. I went out on a limb and whispered, "Doc, Rose is afraid Birdie is visiting you." He laughed heartily. "Not to worry. I'll see Rose a little bit later on tonight. Birdie seems more interested in Luciano these days." "I'm sure you don't mind that." Doc raised his eyebrows. "Don't sell your aunt short, Holly. She's a very bright woman." That took me completely by surprise. Aunt Birdie drove some people bananas, yet had ingratiated herself with others. I thanked him for the cat and dog treats and scuttled down the stairs of his front porch. On our way back to the inn, I sought out Rose to assure her that Birdie hadn't been visiting Doc. I needn't have worried. Doc was already with her. "Holly," called Rose, "did Holmes find you? He said you have the wrong shoe." "Wrong shoe?" "That's what he said. For a costume, maybe?" I shrugged. I had no idea what he was talking about. "I'll find him. Thanks, Rose." Back at the inn, I phoned Holmes, but his number rolled over to voicemail. At 11 o'clock, Oma retired to her quarters, and I filled in for Casey behind the registration desk. Silent tranquility had settled over the inn. The apparition apprehenders had all gone over to the Wagtail Springs Hotel for a final investigation. Mrs. Muir and Twinkletoes were nowhere to be seen. "Looks like it's just the two of us, Trixie." She wagged her short tail and aimed her nose at the treat jar on the counter. "You're lucky you're so cute." I indulged her with a tiny sugar maple in cookie. I tidied up a bit, replenishing brochures and tucking away items that needed to be out of sight. The shoe Casper had carried around and chewed on was still in the lost and found box. One of the ghost hunters would probably realize that he had lost it after he checked out, went home, and unpacked. I brought the bills up to date on the computer, an easy task because Mr. Luciano was footing the expense for everyone except Lillian Elsner and Parker Colby. By midnight, I realized why Casey often napped on the love seat. My eyelids were growing heavy, and precious little remained to be done. The registration area Oma had built made sense for arriving and departing guests. But at this hour, I felt as though anything could be happening in the hotel without my knowledge. I would have to talk to Oma about making a change. To be on the safe side, I took a cue from Casey and walked through the silent hallway to make sure the front door was still locked. It was, but it wouldn't hurt to put on a pot of coffee. Without caffeine, I would drift off to sleep. Trixie pricked her ears and turned in the direction of the registration area. Uh-oh, what if someone was looking for me? I jogged along the hallway behind Trixie, whose nails clicked against the floor as she ran ahead. A gust of cold wind blew into the room as the automatic doors slid closed. "Hello?" I called. No one answered. I peeked in the office. Empty. I couldn't help thinking it was eerily reminiscent of the day the apparition apprehenders checked in. Someone had said it was a ghost when the doors opened on their own and wind blew through the room. Against my better judgment, I looked up at the wall where we had seen the orb. Perfectly normal. I've been hanging around ghost hunters too long, Trixie. I'm beginning to think there are such things as ghosts. Trixie followed a scent on the floor. She sniffed upward and, for a moment, I thought she was smelling the treat jar, but she balanced on her hind legs and overturned the lost and found box with her front paws. Trixie! I knelt on the floor and gathered the items. A child-sized red and blue mitten, a sheer pink blouse that made me wonder how the owner had lost it, 3 dog toys, and a thin camera. Replacing the box where it belonged, I said, "Don't do that again." She wagged her tail as though I had said she was the best dog in the world. I leaned over and hugged her. And then I realized that the gust of wind had definitely not been a ghost. As far as I knew, ghosts were not in the habit of stealing shoes. 31. In case I was wrong about that, I knelt on the floor again, just to be sure the shoe hadn't slid under the desk or been overlooked. It wasn't there. Who would steal a shoe from a lost and found box? Trixie knew, of course. She had smelled the scent on the box. But she wasn't telling. Where was Zelda when I needed to read Trixie's mind? I hit the button to lock the doors. From now on, at least, I would know who came in or out. Suddenly, I wasn't quite so sleepy anymore. I pulled the box out from under the counter and took everything out. There was no question about it. The shoe was gone. But why? To be on the safe side, I made an inventory of the contents before putting them all back into the box. Casper had picked up the shoe somewhere. Most likely he found it inside the inn. Felix would have noticed Casper carrying it around if he had discovered it outside. It had been a quality shoe of soft leather. Casper had left some scratches on it, but the shoe hadn't been wet. Of course, it could have dried in the days since Mallory's death. Didn't leather become stiff after being wet? Would Casper's chewing have softened it up? The leather had still been supple. If the shoe had been worn by the killer, then he probably was staying at the inn. Nonsense. I was being silly and leaping to conclusions. One of the ghost hunters had probably griped about his missing shoe, and when Felix said it was in the lost and found box, he ran back to the inn to retrieve it. There were serious flaws in my logic. Why not pick it up when he returned? Why take it back to the haunted hotel with him? Ugh! There must be some logical and perfectly innocent reason that someone barged in at midnight to swipe that shoe. I wondered what size the shoe had been. Why hadn't I paid attention? Such an obvious detail. At 1 in the morning, Mr. Luciano, Lillian Elsner, and Glory B. returned from the ghost hunt and rang the bell to enter. I pressed the button under the desk, and the door slid open. "How's it going over there?" I asked. "No sign of any child ghosts. They're all a bit disappointed," Lillian said.
"I'm exhausted." Mr. Luciano wiped his brow. "Ah, to be younger again and think of nothing of carousing in the wee hours."
"It's amazing how many people are still milling about in the pedestrian zone." Lillian smiled at Mr. Luciano. "We considered stopping for a nightcap, but..." She clasped the hand just below her neck. "We changed our minds." I thought I could read her mind. "Aunt Bertie?" "Goodness, but she can be a pest," Lillian said, laughing. "I believe she thinks I'm chasing our dear Mr. Luciano. Isn't that cute? We met here at the inn for the first time a few days ago. We're becoming good friends, but nothing more."
"Your aunt is a lovely woman, but a bit possessive," said Mr. Luciano in a very dignified and polite way.
"A bit obsessive, too, if you ask me. Perhaps I could offer you a nightcap. Bertie's not here, so I think you'll be safe from her claws."
"That would be delightful. Thank you, Holly."
Mr. Luciano peeled off his jacket and helped Lillian with hers. Lillian pushed her hair into place. "I don't think it's a typical nightcap, but the ghost hunters have talked about it so much that I'm itching to try a zombie brain. Would that be too much trouble?" "No trouble at all," I assured her. "Mr. Luciano?" He laughed.
"Make it two."
They settled on the love seat, and I dared to leave them alone while I dashed to the kitchen. A quick call to Hair of the Dog, and I had Val's super easy recipe. When I poured the rose's sweet lime on top of the Baileys, it sank through the Baileys in small greenish clouds. Definitely spooky, and a little bit repulsive. I set the small glasses on a silver tray and added a plate with a few of the pumpkin whoopie pies in case they wanted a little nosh. When I returned, I overheard Lillian talking. "I never expected to love Wagtail so much." She took the drink and napkin I held out on a tray. "Thank you, Holly." She sipped her drink. "Oh, it's strong." Taking a breath, she continued. "I lost my husband a few years ago. It was a bigger adjustment than I could have imagined. I didn't realize how much our lives revolved around his career."
"That would have been Congressman Elsner?" asked Mr. Luciano.
At her nod, he smiled.
"A virtuous man."
Lillian threw her head back and laughed with glee. "You should be a politician. Such a delicate way of putting it. I loved the man, but he was draconian, rigid and punctilious. Heaven forbid a hair be out of place. My gracious, but he was fussy." She flipped back a tendril of hair. "Now that I have no need to live near Washington anymore, I've been looking for a place where I can be myself. Be a little more relaxed." She leaned forward and spoke in a stage whisper. "Wear a t-shirt and get dirty in a garden." When we stopped laughing, she said, "Mark's parents raved about Wagtail. I thought it would be a nice little vacation for Glory Bee and me. But now I think I might want to buy a cabin in the woods. It's just so relaxing here.
You knew Mark before you came here? I asked.
Oh, sure. Since his I-will-not-wear-clothes days when he ran around buck naked.
Mr. Luciano grinned.
I hope that wasn't recently.
I think he was about 2 or 3,
she assured him.
Did you have a chance to visit with Mark before?
I stopped short of saying the ugly truth, before the murder.
Before he got so busy with the ghost hunting? I did. I had a couple of lovely dinners with Mark and Grayson. The only damper on this trip has been the death of that poor young woman, Mallory. I warned Mark about her. I knew she was trouble. It breaks my heart to think that Mark is under suspicion.
Indeed, said Mr. Luciano. He's a fine young man. I hope things will blossom between Mark and Eva. If I'm not mistaken, I believe I've seen a twinkle in his eyes when he looks at her.
Mr. Luciano and Lillian headed off to bed, leaving me to take care of paperwork in the office and contemplate Mark. Everything seemed to point at him. His involvement with Eva was especially concerning. We all thought Mallory had a lot of nerve taking credit for his book. But what if he did the research and she wrote the book? Had he given her credit? We probably had a copy. If I knew Oma, she would have purchased it. I scrambled to my feet and hurried to the inn library. Yesterday's newspaper lay on the hardwood floor, shredded. Assorted books had been knocked from the shelves, the pages clawed. Trixie had been with me the whole time. Gingersnap had retired to bed with Oma. Casper was out hunting ghosts with Felix. But this mystery wasn't quite as difficult to solve. 2 furry rascals had the run of the inn. While I'd been working, they had been too. Twinkle Toes, I called softly. Trixie made a mad dash for Eva's room. She'd left her door ajar. I knocked out of habit, pushed the door open, and switched on the chandelier overhead. Mrs. Muir and Twinkle Toes sat on the bed, looking as innocent as little kittens. A telltale shred of a page clung to one of Mrs. Muir's claws. I closed the door so they wouldn't attack any more books. There was no point in scolding them. But Twinkle Toes' new friend had taught her a very irritating trick. I returned to the library, cleaned up the newspaper, and reshelved the books. Only 3 had to be replaced. Oddly enough, one of them was Haunting Horrors of Wagtail. No mention of Mallory on the cover. I flipped it open to the title page. Only Mark's name was listed. The copyright was in Mark's name, too. I read the dedication. No mention of Mallory whatsoever, not even thanks for her assistance. I started back to the registration desk with the damaged books in my arms. As I passed the front door, someone knocked eagerly and peered inside. I unlocked the door. Brian, hi! He rubbed his arms as he lumbered in.
Burr, it's cold out there. Thanks for letting me in, Holly.
Are you through for the night?
Not completely. I just came to get some, batteries for the recorder.
Lillian said you're not picking up children's voices tonight.
It's a bummer, but sometimes we don't hear the voices and sounds until we play them back. So far, no running feet, though. Nothing exciting like that.
He headed upstairs. I put on a pot of coffee in the private kitchen and poured myself a mug to stay awake. Assuming Brian had left, I locked the front door. Trixie turned her head to look up the stairs. I didn't see anyone, but she wagged her tail as though she anticipated someone's imminent arrival. "Come on, Trixie," I called. There wasn't a good place to conceal myself. I did a 180-degree turn and re-entered the private kitchen. I scooped up Trixie so she wouldn't give me away. With the door cracked just enough to see, I peered out.
Ryan stole down the stairs, glanced around, and headed for the library, carrying a purse. When I thought it was safe, I followed him. On the other side of the library, he opened the door to Eva's room and disappeared inside. It was a tough call. Confront him or let him carry out his plans. If he had killed Mallory, he could be violent, and I could be in serious danger. I opted to return to the kitchen and wait until I saw him pass by in the other direction. Seconds later, he unlocked the front door and left. If he was carrying batteries, I didn't see them. They could have been in a pocket, I supposed. I stepped out on the front porch into the night air. Brian jogged along the empty sidewalk. For a long moment, I considered what to do. It wasn't right to snoop in a guest room. But what if Brian had put something dangerous in that bag? There was no question that his behavior had been highly suspicious. I returned to the lobby and locked the front door securely behind me. With some trepidation, I opened the door to Eva's room. The cat lounged on her bed. I spotted the purse right away. The handle stuck out from under the dressing table, as though Brian wanted it to be discovered. Taking a deep breath, I pulled it out from underneath the furniture. It was an Hermes Birkin bag, the signature purse of outrageously wealthy women who could plop down cash for a handbag that cost as much as a car. I had seen plenty of them at my old job as a fundraiser, but had never actually held one. It was made of exquisite light blue leather with gold hardware on the front. I opened it with caution, leaning back in case something fizzed out of it. Nothing happened. I peered inside. It was empty. The interior was oddly stiff. A colorful mosaic that melded into strange hues covered the bottom. Surely this was not how a pricey handbag was supposed to look inside. I stifled a gasp. One sniff and I knew the truth. It was Clementine's handbag. 32. There was no mistaking the smell of crayons. What were the odds that there would be two expensive Birkin bags in Wagtail in which someone had melted crayons? 0 to none. That's what. Clementine had given the bag to Mallory. I wanted to imagine there was a good reason for Brian stashing it in Eva's room. I could only come to one conclusion, though. He must have taken it from Mallory and wanted to frame Eva for Mallory's death. That would explain the presence of Mallory's necklace in Eva's room, too. I jogged to the registration desk and phoned Dave. He sounded groggy. I'll be right there. 10 minutes later, Dave stood in the lobby with me, examining the purse. By 4 in the morning, Clementine had confirmed that it was, indeed, the handbag that she had given to Mallory. And with Brian's permission, Dave was searching his room. Oma, Mr. Luciano, and Lillian had awakened and joined the crowd of ghost hunters downstairs. I ran around answering questions and offering hot cider. Oma rustled up some platters of cheese and crackers, as well as cookies. Eva glared at Brian, whose face had turned crimson as the fall leaves. "Why?" she demanded. "Why would you do this to me?" He squinted at her. "Are you kidding? Do you not know how mean you are to me? You act like I'm a big, dumb galumph. My teachers used to treat me that way, like I was the stupidest blockhead of a kid they'd ever encountered. This is payback, baby. You run around so cocky and full of yourself with your nose pointing up in the air. This is how Brian manifested a ghost out of thin air and bamboozled the public." He held up his hands and gestured in a prissy manner when he mimicked her. Eva held a hand to her throat and swallowed hard. If Brian wanted comeuppance, He'd just achieved it. Dave ambled down the stairs, carrying a laptop and a cell phone.
"I'd like you to come with me, Brian, so I can ask you some questions."
"About what?"
"All I did was play a few innocent and harmless pranks to make Eva think Mallory was haunting her. Nobody got hurt."
"Did you find the other shoe?" I asked.
"No.
But there are a few photographs of Mallory on your phone and computer that I'd like to talk about."
"That's not against the law."
"Some of the images are disturbing."
I gasped.
"Are they kind of warped?"
I glanced at Eva.
"The image in the mirror."
"My personal favorite."
Brian took a bow.
"Heard you both saw that one. It was pretty spooky, huh?"
"Where was the projector?" asked Mark.
Brian shook his head. "I'm not giving away all my secrets."
But the way his glance flashed over to the decorative mummies gave me a clue. Trixie had sniffed around the base of them. I should have paid more attention to what her nose found interesting.
"The recording of a ghost saying Eva's name?" Mark asked.
"Also me. Pretty convincing, eh?"
"The light in Eva's room the first night you were here?" I asked.
"Guilty. But none of that was illegal. Just harmless fun."
He was admitting everything.
"Where did you get the jewelry and the purse?"
Brian grinned as if he was proud of himself. "From Mark's house, the day we went over to express our sympathy. I dropped them out a window and collected them later. No biggie, I was just borrowing them."
Dave calmly said, "I'd like to talk with you further back at the station, okay?"
"Wait," I cried. "Did you try to break into the kitchen door on the lake side of the inn?"
Brian's brow wrinkled.
"Nope. Had nothing to do with that. Sure I'll go with you."
He sneered at Eva.
"Because I haven't done anything wrong. I have a clear conscience."
The moment Dave and Brian left, chatter filled the inn. To a person, everyone speculated about Brian killing Mallory. Only the dogs and cats seemed bored. Eventually, everyone straggled up to bed, except for Ben and me. I thought about Brian and Mallory while we cleaned up. Mallory must have gone to Clementine's house while the ghost hunters were eating dinner. I thought back, but didn't recall Mallory carrying a handbag when I saw her at the bonfire. She probably dropped the purse off at Mark's house. Then she joined the ghost hunters for drinks at Hair of the Dog and walked home with Zelda and Felix. At that point, for some unknown reason, she changed into her Becca Wraith ghost outfit. Had Brian sneaked out to Mark's house? Mark wouldn't have known because he was here at the inn with Eva. I stopped in the middle of washing a pot. A shudder ran down my spine as I considered how cleverly Brian had stolen the handbag and the necklace and planted them in Eva's room. Maybe he wasn't as dumb as Eva thought. Ben brought the last tray into the kitchen. "Will Brian's admission be enough to charge him with murder?" I asked.
"Not a chance. They probably have enough for petty larceny, but that's all."
"Those purses have price tags in the 5-digit range.
What kind of idiot would pay that much for a handbag?"
"That's not the question."
"Okay," he shrugged. "Grand larceny. But I didn't hear anything that tied him to Mallory's murder."
Neither had I. Someone must have seen or heard something helpful that night. I stopped in my tracks. But someone had. Clementine had seen someone running with an odd gait. And that merchant from town said his wife saw the ghost of the Black Panther. Well, that didn't help at all. Ben went up to bed. I held down the fort until Frankenstein showed up at the glass doors of the reception area. My breath caught for a moment, but Shelley, dressed as a cheerleader, arrived right behind him. I buzzed them in, and Frankenstein took off his head long enough for me to realize he was the cook. Halloween Day had officially arrived.
I was thrilled when Zelda showed up to replace me, dressed as a cat. She had drawn whiskers on her face, accented her eyes with makeup, and wore ears and a tail. I stumbled upstairs to my apartment, brushed my teeth, pulled on a nightshirt, and fell into bed thinking I would never volunteer for another all-nighter. I dozed off with Trixie at my feet. At 1 in the afternoon, I returned to the living. No hot tea or chocolate croissants awaited me in the kitchen. I had missed breakfast, too. A shame. I had come to enjoy them. While I showered, I considered what costume would be most comfortable to wear during the day. I had a witch costume planned for the gala in the evening. In which box might I have packed my costume for Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz? I threw on my bathrobe and rummaged through boxes. Twinkletoes jumped into them, and Mrs. Muir stretched up to peer in at her. They made it into a game and chased each other. The costume turned up in the fourth box and was surprisingly unwrinkled. I'd had the sense to pack shoes together, but had to dig down to find the ruby slippers, which were pumps covered with red sequins. Even the bows just above the toes glowed with sequins. Trixie sniffed around the box. "You're a terrier, but not exactly Toto." I cupped my hands around her ears and kissed her forehead. There was no rule that said Dorothy didn't have a thing for Tootsie Rolls. I slid the costume over Trixie's head. She seemed quite comfortable in it. I pulled on my own white blouse and slipped the blue and white gingham pinafore dress over it. I braided my hair and tied it with matching gingham ribbons. White socks, the fabulous ruby slippers, and I was ready to go. Trouble loomed before I made it all the way downstairs. Dave strolled in the front door of the inn, looking grim. There was no mistaking his police uniform for a costume. I smiled at him anyway. "Good morning. Living in a different time zone, Holly? It's afternoon." "Uh-oh." He seemed a little bit grumpy. "What's going on? How's Brian?" "Brian will probably be back soon. I'm looking for Mark." I glanced around the sitting room and the dining area. "Try Eva's room." "Thanks." I grabbed his arm. "You're not going to tell me why?" Dave looked dead tired. He shrugged. "You can tag along, Dorothy." Eva answered the door in a trim pink suit, pillbox hat, and white gloves. Jackie Kennedy, for sure. "Afternoon, Eva. Is Mark here?" asked Dave. Eva's eyes widened with fear, and she backed up. "Mark?" He strolled toward us barefoot, wearing a sugar maple in bathrobe and a towel around his neck. His hair stood at odd angles, as though he had just towel-dried it. "Hi, Dave. Holly. Mark, do you own a penknife?"
"Yeah."
"Can you describe it?"
"Sure. It's one of those Swiss models with all kinds of cool stuff on it." "Did somebody find it? I've been looking everywhere for that thing." His eyes narrowed. "My name isn't on it. How would you know it belonged to me?"
Dave ignored his question. "When is the last time you saw it?"
"I had it when Grayson got here. We went over to Wraith Hollow and hiked up the mountain. I took it with me then. After that, I couldn't find it. Turned the house upside down looking for that thing."
"Did Grayson use it?"
"I don't think so."
Dave focused on Mark intensely. "Why would Mallory's fingerprints be on it?"
33. I'm not a psychologist, but Mark's surprise seemed as genuine as my own.
"Mallory?" asked Mark.
"Mallory?" I echoed.
"Maybe she borrowed it," said Mark. And just like that, my suspicions about him faded. Mark was as calm as a lake on a Sunday morning. He could have used a word like swiped or stole, but he showed his true colors when he said borrowed, as if it were a natural act between friends, and she would have returned it to him.
but I was reeling from the revelation. Someone, presumably Mark or Mallory, since their fingerprints were on the knife, had lost it exactly where the pumpkin had been smashed.
"When did you hike with Grayson?" I asked.
Mark's forehead wrinkled. "A couple of days before everyone else arrived." I waited for Dave to continue with his questions. I shouldn't have butted in. While Dave and Mark spoke, I was calculating. It seemed perfectly reasonable that it might have fallen out of Mark's pocket, but it happened during a very narrow window of time, which made it suspect. It had landed there sometime in the last few days. It was lying under a piece of pumpkin, so one might even draw the conclusion that it happened before or when the pumpkin smashed, making the potential time frame still narrower. But I couldn't see how it tied into Mallory's death.
"Where else did you go?" asked Dave.
"When?"
"That day, before hiking or after hiking."
"Grayson met me at my house. We walked over to Wraith Hollow and hiked. Then I went home to shower and change before meeting with Rose at Cafe Chat."
"Thanks."
Dave turned toward me. "Could I have a word with you privately?"
"Sure."
I led the way to the kitchen. "Someone called the chief of police to lodge a complaint against me. There's a remote chance that they'll pull me off the Wagtail detail."
"No! You're part of the fabric of Wagtail. We'll stage a protest."
"Don't you dare. I don't want a big fuss. Don't say a word to anyone else, okay? I'm on my way to meet with the chief. I'll keep you posted."
"No, it's not okay. We're not going to let that happen to you."
"Who complained?"
Dave sighed.
"One Birdie Dupuis."
"Why would she do a thing like that?"
What was I thinking? She was crazy enough to have gotten me out of bed on false pretenses and timed my response.
"She's been chasing Doc a long time. He only has eyes for Rose. I'd guess she's trying to ingratiate herself."
"Say no more. I'll call your chief and tell him she's a nut."
"Thanks, Holly, but that's not necessary. This business with Brian, the attack on Clementine, Mallory's fingerprints on the knife."
He shook his head. "I don't know how it all ties together yet, but at least the chief will know I'm not out of bounds by suspecting murder. Don't worry. I'll still be around. They could assign me somewhere else, but I live in Wagtail, and they can't make me move."
I hugged him.
"Good luck. Let me know if I can help, okay?"
Dave smiled at me. "Don't call anybody on my behalf yet. I'll be in touch after I meet with the chief."
No sooner had we left the kitchen than Holmes flagged me down. In dark jeans with blood-red stripes up the sides, tall boots, a cream-colored captain's shirt with a V-neck, and a black utility vest, he looked fairly normal, but the mock blaster pistol he carried gave his costume away. Han Solo.
"Good morning, Mr. Solo. I'll be right with you. I think it's Mr. Huckle's day off. I'd better give Shelley a hand setting up for the ghost hunters."
With Holmes pitching in, the breakfast buffet in the Dogwood Room was ready to go in a matter of minutes. The apparition apprehenders trickled in, groggy after being up all night. Brian showed up as the Incredible Hulk. Felix and Casper wore coordinating